Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. We come to you live here from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and you can have your say by calling us on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Yeah, so the COVID-19 has made everything go pear-shaped in all aspects of life and work and entertainment and all the above, but also for our international students who are vulnerable. And we look at the Homestay Partnership with New South Wales Government, the Australian Homestay Network, and the work they're doing there. And we're going to catch up a yarn now with the founder of the Australian Homestay Network, David Bycroft. Got him on the line. David, a very good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Trevor. I'm fine, and things are looking good for some of the students who are in trouble.
Yes, yes, yes. And look, it's no one's fault in regard to COVID-19 upon us, which has virtually turned the world upside down. But we need to do due diligence regarding looking after our international students and vulnerable in regard to accommodation. And Australian Homestay Network is doing their bit, yes?
Yes, we've reached out to the industry, including the education providers throughout Australia and all of the governments, and we're very excited about the response because the international students actually have been caught with no job that would normally fund their accommodation and their meals.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, there's not many jobs around at the moment for even Australians. So,
exactly.
You know, they are diving into their savings and a lot of them have just run out of money and can't get home.
So, like I said, it's the right thing to do in regard to housing. We were talking about essentials. Well, international students are our visitors, but they do need essential things in life as well, don't they?
Yeah, they're not only our visitors. They play an important part in our whole economy.
Okay.
You know, they're one of Australia's biggest exports is international education. So the international students getting a good deal from us during this crisis will spread the word that Australia is not only a safe country, but also a welcoming country.
Exactly. And that's the pitch we need to paint because, like you said, it's a great investment. It's a way of marketing Australia and how we operate and how we do business in this country, which opens up the door, you could say, for international visitors and more to come, yeah?
Yeah, post-COVID, we think that the international student market will be taking safety into account and how well they're welcomed into a country as a major decision-making factor. So we're hopeful that the work we're doing and the work all of Australia is doing, you know, to keep them welcomed here during a hard time is going to benefit our future.
Now, AHN has been included in the provided as a provider to deliver short-term emergency accommodation as part of the recently announced New South Wales Government $20 million international student support package. So the money we're talking about here, it's a great investment as such, yes?
Yeah, it goes to various accommodation providers, including purpose-built accommodation, not just homes, but it's really the students are starting to apply now with the New South Wales Government. And we will be starting to place many more students, we think, over the next 3 weeks.
And so the network as such, it provides also business opportunities for Australians as such, yes?
Yeah, look, there's people with this funding, it's very low funding for the host because most of the people who are applying to us for this program are doing so because they want to help out, and it's almost a semi-volunteer position. They're getting paid an honorarium. But once the market comes back, we do have hosting for many hosts where it is money coming into the household to help the household survive, particularly if they've had an effect from COVID in their own employment as an Australian. So having someone in your home who's an international student is not only a pleasurable experience, but it's also can bring a bit of money into the home.
Exactly. The industry itself, it's a big industry in regarding economy?
Yeah, look, the international education industry is about $40 billion
yes.
coming into Australia and creates 250,000 Australian jobs. So you're talking about a very big part of our export, which I think is ranked number three in exports. It's behind iron and coal, you know, those types of
things. It's way up there then.
But it's way up there. And look, we want it back. Right now it's pretty quiet because there's not a lot of new students coming in because they can't get into the country.
Exactly.
So we're needing it to grow again as soon as everything reopens. So we're looking forward to 2021.
Aren't we all? Look, a very important conversation. Thank you very much for sharing. Good luck with it all, and love the space that you're working in. And you've been the founder of Australian Homestay Network, got a strong foundation regarding its future. So thank you very much, and all the best to you and your team and your family, David. You stay safe, eh?
Okay, thanks, Trevor. Stay safe too.
Bye-bye. Adelie Yarn there. That's David Bycroft, his name is, the Australian Homestay Network founder, and the new recently $20 million from by the New South Wales Government International Student Support Package in looking after support and assist vulnerable international students. A big industry, a big market, and it's about looking after our visitors who are working in this country, and they provide a lot for this country. So keeping that relationship strong internationally, but like I said, COVID-19 has put a spin on things, but it's adapting to the spin and looking after so-called COVID-19 when it disappears is the goal. We can work further in this area. Fantastic. You mob, have your say. 1-800-422-416. Call that number. Yana with yours truly, Trevor Tim Trendy Trev Murray from Nakari, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, a voice for our people. So do utilise it. And we're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumber Brit Media, 19.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to the NERS, National News Radio Service. So give me a call. Let's have a yarn. 1-800-422-416. Yeah, do that. Call me and have a say here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Sound like I was talking the syllables just then. Shut up. Good morning to you, mob. Hope you're well. National Talk Black, live here from the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. Deadly number 1-800-422-416. We're now going to do the segment, Which Way Yarning? And that's with the Edmonton Police. Catch up with Senior Sergeant Len Delay. And this daily program is proudly sponsored by IGA. And that's Pecone IGA, Brisbane, Edmonton. They give us a box of fruit here once a week, and so we can push that deadly phrase of healthy living, healthy lifestyle. But online we've got Sergeant Len Delay. Good morning, my brother. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Trevor. How you going, mate?
Good. Fantastic. Are you flying solo, are you?
Flying solo today, yeah. Robbie's having a few days off, so, yeah, the reins are in my hands.
All right, there you go. Well, it's in good hands, my brother, so thank you very much for coming to the program. So topic today, we're talking about, vehicle theft. With COVID-19, Glenn, please answer the question in regard to, has that lifted crime, in your area?
We're still finding vehicles, are being stolen. And, look, I know there was a little bit of a drop in crime for this area over that COVID-19 lockdown, but that seems to be creeping its way back up.
So while they're lifting the restrictions, crime is lifting, is what you're saying?
That's right. So more people are sort of out and moving about and, with sort of further distances they can travel. There's certainly, movement there where people are getting themselves involved in crime. So, and vehicle theft, in particular, what I want to talk about is the joyriding. The youths, in the previous few weeks, we've had a very serious accident down in Townsville.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
A number of youths were killed, and I'm seeing it here in Cairns, even the last few days where we've had youths, same scenario where they're trying to point police into chasing them. And really, I'm assuming this is all for fun and for posting for social media for their own self-gain. But, we've really got to sit there and look at some of the consequences from their actions.
Well, exactly. Look, we're talking about kids wet behind the ears, haven't sucked the milk, so to speak, haven't lived life and don't realise that the danger that they're putting themselves in, as well as other constituents of the area, yep?
Yeah, that's right. So most of these children don't have driver's licences. A lot of them, they may think they can drive a car. All of us know when we first got our licences, we're actually pretty hopeless on the road. So the dangers here, though, of children driving at speed.
Yes.
children driving whilst intoxicated, whether that's alcohol or drugs, you know, trying to show off to their peers and taking extreme risks. And, you know, in the end, we find that, you know, they're crashing these vehicles. People can be either killed, maimed, you know, that they themselves can be killed.
Yes.
This can be their friends or, look, just the general public getting about their own business.
Well, exactly. And when you look at the so-called vehicle theft, Glenn, are we talking carjacking, or are we talking about breaking into houses, grabbing the keys? What's the go there?
Yeah, look, probably more so breaking into houses and grabbing the keys, but certainly the carjacking does occur. You know, some of these children, once they know police have identified the vehicle that they're in, they may try to swap the vehicles for another one. You know, look, depending on how old the kid children are, if they're, you know, I mean, we're seeing kids as young as 12 in some of these vehicles.
Sure.
They're less likely to try and, you know, steal a car directly from a person. But again, same consequences, whether they're, you know, we end up in the same sort of outcomes. This can just be caught, the children's lives ruined by criminal history. These are serious offences. Serious enough offence to be found in a stolen vehicle, you know, unlicensed driving, unlawful possession of a motor vehicle, evading police, stealing. But then when we have the accidents, then we're looking at dangerous operation, causing death, you know, or causing grievous bodily harm. You know, they're life-changing offences for some people, you know, for the victims and also for the perpetrators.
Well, exactly. I mean, like, and, well, if you're dead, then it doesn't matter. But, like, the situation in Townsville, I believe four young lives and the driver lived, and then he's got to live with that, yeah?
Yeah, amazing. And that'd be an incredible amount of weight to hold. And we also need to remember the families and friends of the people that are killed. Mm. You know, they've lost a loved one, and, you know, children do stupid things sometimes.
Exactly.
The consequences there are huge.
And we're talking, all ages, very young ages, and we're talking, you know, black or white. The kids, the youth, they're unstable or, you know, haven't got their foot on the right track, so to speak. They're off on a rocky road to life.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and that's what we ask, you know, parents to know who their children are with and what they're doing, particularly coming up to school holiday time.
Exactly.
And acknowledge that peer relationships play a key role in that initial involvement with joyriding in vehicles. You know, if their friends are doing it and they become involved, they're more likely to continue doing this themselves.
Mm. So you're talking about, you just touched on some of the preventions that we can all do as a community. Just enlighten us with more preventions.
Yeah, look, I think, like, one of the big things is I think if a lot of the time someone knows this is happening, you know, and that may not be the children's direct parents, but it certainly may be an older brother, you know, an uncle, an auntie, or someone. That's when we need to sort of have family intervene and speak with those children about the consequences. Have a look at what mentors they are in their life.
Sure.
You know, seek out good mentors and get them to speak to the children. You know, educating the children that the consequences do outweigh the enjoyments of joyriding.
Yes.
And, you know, and look, just have them conversations and let your children know that they're too valuable to lose in an accident. You know, none of us want our children racing around in vehicles. You know, and I think that's probably where they'll make that connection, that their family do care for them.
Sure.
And they don't want to see them, in the hospital or morgue. So,
do you think there could be more work done in schools and regarding, I don't know, videos or sessions in school to talk about, the horrific accidents that have happened because of it, and, you know, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah. Look, I'm sympathetic with schools because they've got a big load, you know.
Of course they have.
To keep children educated. Look, it's a whole of community approach. You know, this is schools, parents, uncles, aunties, teachers, like everyone that comes and has some sort of involvement in these children's lives need to really hammer home the message that this sort of behaviour is very dangerous and these children have got a good future ahead of them. We don't need to have their lives ruined at such a young age.
Yeah, so a lot of work to be done there. If anything is happening like that, ask the constituents not to involve themselves in regards to the theft. What's the best idea?
As in for the children?
For the victims, so to speak, or if they see something happening, ring the police, don't get involved.
Yeah, look, that's right. Yeah, we'll always discourage people from challenging these people that are because look, some of these offenders are armed and some of them are motivated. So, you know, if for victims, the message would be, you know, to contact police. Mm. And also, like these family members that know their children may be involved with this sort of activity. There's no reason you can't go down to your local police station and seek some advice.
Sure.
If you want to be anonymous, there's always Crime Stoppers at 1-800-333-000.
Mm-hmm.
That there, at least then you don't feel like you've become involved, but you've done something about it. And,
yeah.
and that's important because, you know, you could have saved these children's lives or
exactly.
you could have saved the lives of a member of the public.
Well, exactly. Innocent people. All right, well, thank you very much, Crime Stoppers. 1-800-333-000.
Yep, that's the number.
Okay, fantastic. Or emergency 000. Thank you very much. All the best, Sergeant Glenn Delay. We'll talk soon, my friend.
Sure. Thanks, Trevor.
Bye-bye. Adela Yarn there with Senior Sergeant Glenn Delay from Edmonton Police. And that segment there, Which Way Yarning? And that's Adela's segment regarding Cousin Rob Hollingsworth, PLO, Police Liaison Officer, who's on a day off. And he want to organise this fantastic chat with the Edmonton Police. Running for about a couple of years now, and a fantastic partnership that we do regarding communicating with the mob out there. So fantastic. Have your say here on your daily program, National Talk Black. The deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Call that number, Yarn, with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the NERS, NERS station that takes us across the country. NIRS, National Digital Radio Service. There's a text number as well, 045-714-0550. And our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. And if you check our Facebook page, see all our deadly photos and all our deadly yarns, and plus our podcast. And good to jump on there if you want to flick us a message as well. Too deadly.
Rain forest is tall. The river tarrant rushes to my cuckoo Yalanchi girl. I look into her deep brown eyes, says something I can't hide. The mountains that I climb, I find my sacred, sacred side. Come shine your lights, brighten up the world. Cuckoo Yalanchi, cuckoo Yalanchi, cuckoo Yalanchi, cuckoo Yalanchi girl. Break that evil curse that stole my heart.
days after days, black man. And sometimes we're confused, sometimes feel hurt and used. But still we're here today to make a stand. A living testimony of our army's glory. Today, surviving man of an ancient story. A witness of this land, still trying to understand the hurt and pain of a mother and a worry. I'll kiss her hand, I'll kiss her feet, care for the tree with the fruits so sweet. I'll take my place in this land of the kangaroo. I'll kiss her hand, I'll kiss her feet, care for the tree with the fruits so sweet. I'll take my place in this land of the kangaroo. I'll take my place in this land of the kangaroo. I'll kiss her hand, I'll kiss her feet, care for the tree with the fruits so sweet. I'll take my place in this land of the kangaroo. Now we're here together, trying to understand. We're talking about the ways of today's black man. Sometimes we're confused, sometimes feel hurt and used, but still we're here today to make a stand. I'll kiss her hand, I'll kiss her feet, care for the tree with the fruits so sweet. I'll take my place in this land of the kangaroo. I'll kiss her hand, I'll kiss her feet, care for the tree with the fruits so sweet. I'll take my place in this land of the kangaroo. I'll take my place in this land of the kangaroo. And I'll take my place in this land of the kangaroo. Take my place in this land of the kangaroo.
Hey folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
Yeah, Two Daily Mob, welcome back to your daily program. National Talk Black, the daily number 1-800-422-416. Yarnum with the bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. Live from First Nations Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. Have your say in Yarnum, stronger and across the nation. Thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. And looking to have a yarn with you, Mob, so give me a call and let's talk up strong. All right, we're going to catch up with the Member of Parliament for Leichhardt. We have Warren Inch on the line. And a very good morning, Warren. How are you?
I'm very, 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 very good.
Good.
Deadly Trev, and I've got to say, you talk very, very fast.
Running this teeth and for somebody else, that's all, brother. And words go ahead of me, but that's all good. We get educated along the way. Look, we are still in the phase of COVID-19, and the vaccine's not there. Restrictions have not been lifted in the state of Queensland. Where do you think we're at, and how do you think we're going with it all?
Well, I'm hoping that more and more restrictions will be lifted sooner rather than later. Mm. Federal government has pulled off, removed all of their restrictions in relation to biosecurity area for Cape York and the Torres Strait. That was removed at midnight on the 11th of June.
Yes.
So so it's over to the state government. State government's actually taken control away from the local councils as well, and they're making decisions there. A little bit inconsistent, I have to say, Trav, in so much as there are about 319 businesses in the Cook Shire, and at the moment, the state government has made a decision that if you're living in any of the communities, you're welcome to travel into Douglas Shire, the Atherton Shire, Mareeba Shire, or Cairns Regional Council area. You can come down and visit friends and stay as long as you like and go back without quarantining. Or if you have family in any of these areas, they can travel up to the communities and stay as long as they like without quarantining. But if you're a visitor, if you're a resident in those areas and you're wanting to travel up into the Cape or Cooktown to go fishing, or you want to go and stay at one of the motels or the caravan parks, you know, to get out for a while, you're not allowed to go.
So it's one rule for one, different rule for another.
Yeah, and it, the inconsistency, and it's having a huge impact on the businesses up there.
Sure.
It's just not fair. So they need to look at that. From a broader perspective, though, anybody wanting to travel, there's very limited aircraft flights available, and they're not going to increase very much until such time as we can travel outside of Queensland. Now, we've seen that there is a spike in positive testing in Victoria, but understand it's limited to a handful of suburbs, and they're they've got a good handle on it. Rather than just shut down the whole country to Queensland,
yes,
what we need to do is to be managing it. Those suburbs or those regions where there is a problem, they should continue to be in isolation as they are. But if somebody wants to go down to Sydney or to wherever, you know, they should be able to do that. Traveling into, I'd love to be able to get into Northern Territory, into West Australia, into South Australia. They're slowly coming down, and when those barriers start to come down, that's when we're going to see a lot more travel. For example, my wife is very keen to get up and catch up with her friends in Doomadgee. Rex is flying there from time to time, but the frequency of flight makes it difficult for her to go. She's already booked for next month in the hope that they will come down.
Yes.
And I know that there are lots of people up in these communities that also want to travel more, but are restricted. So the sooner we can, I mean, we've done exceptionally well in Queensland. There's only two states now where there's been any, for a long time, where there's been any problems. New South Wales to a lesser degree, but in some suburbs in Victoria where they've seen a lot of problems. We need to, manage those, and there's no reason why they can't, but we also need to make sure that for example, I was going to talk to you about the Jungan Gorge inquiry up in the Kimberleys in the
That's right, because you're the chair of the Northern Australian Committee, is that right?
That's correct.
And they've commenced an inquiry into the destruction of the Indigenous heritage sites at Jungan Gorge, so yeah, go ahead please.
And so what's happening here, it's I understand from the reports I've seen that there's another half a dozen sites in the area that are also under threat, and because of similar circumstances. Now, they've asked me and my committee to report on what has happened at the Jungan Gorge situation by the 30th of September. The problem we have at the moment, we can't travel to West Australia. The border's closed.
Sure.
Now, there is a sense of urgency there, because...
Well, when you say a sense of urgency, yes, but also for First Nation people, we think like a planned deal. There's COVID-19, people can't travel. Let's just dig into this. Oh, there's a sacred site here. Too late, it's been dug up.
Yeah, well, it's one we've got to look at very carefully. I've got Senator Pat Dodson, and I've got Warren Snowden and Dean Smith from West Australia on my committee. So they're good people that I've worked with closely for a long time. We're determined not to just go into this. And this is the reason why it was referred to us, because we have a very, very good working relationship, and we've worked together on many issues without playing the politics. We're determined to have a look at this one. We've got to find out where the cracks are, rather than pointing the finger of blame, because in this particular case, my understanding is that there was an approval given, signed off on this several years ago, so it was done legally, and it was with consultation with one group, saying that they're representing the traditional owners, but they didn't consult with the traditional, with some of the other traditional owners. So it's a bit confusing. It should never have happened.
Yes.
The initial surveys that were done, I understand from Rio, they found a whole lot of artifacts, including a hair belt, which should have been a warning sign that even if you had the approvals, there was something there that they shouldn't be destroying.
Well, it's not like you're digging up a block of land to build a house on, next you find a skull. Cease work. Well, everything stops.
This is a lot more than a skull, Mike.
Thank you. That's what I'm talking about, yes.
46,000 years of history. So what we're trying to do is to find out what went wrong so that we can stop that. Now, one of the problems, we've been actually looked at something much broader, which is not just the Jungan Gorge set of circumstances there, but we've been looked at protecting ancient sites right around the country, which is going to take a lot more than until September. So we're looking at Jungan Gorge, while the federal government's laws are an umbrella law, each state and territory has different laws with regards to this. And what we're looking at in particular in West Australia is what they call Section 18. Now, this is the section that was used by the mining company to facilitate this. Now, I understand from West Australia that there's been already looking at reviewing that. Well, we're going to certainly look very, very closely at that. And the reason for the urgency is that I understand that there is about half a dozen sites that could face similar things because of some mining activity with BHP.
Mm.
And so we've got to make sure that we do this right. You know, I've got to say to you, Rio has an excellent reputation in relation to dealing with cultural matters and cultural sites.
Well, they dropped the ball there, don't you think?
Something's not right here, and we've got to find out what it is.
Yes.
Because we don't want to continue to keep redoing this. So, but as I say, the problem is we can't travel there at the moment. So what I've done last week, I've written to all the Aboriginal Affairs ministers in all the states and territories. I've written to all the mining companies. I've written to all the representative bodies and the native title holder groups, asking them to put in submissions to our committee up until the 31st of July. Now, my secretariat will take those, we'll go through those, and then in August, we're sitting for most of August in Canberra, so in that time we'll be inviting witnesses, focusing specifically on the Jungan Gorge case into Canberra, and so that we can start to take evidence there. And we are planning then in the second week in September, because we're already doing an inquiry into the relationship between traditional owners and also capacity with PBCs, once you've got native title determinations and how economic opportunities are being missed or how they can be gathered.
And also the mining company's got to be talking to the right people and with the right people at the table.
Well, one of the other things, and I'd be interested in a comment on this, and it's something that I've seen happen that I think would be very useful when we're talking about, because, I mean, you're talking to some of these old people, you can paint a very pretty picture with a whole lot of words, but they don't really understand it. You know, a lot of terminology they don't understand.
Sure.
Now, one of the things that I've seen up here that's worked brilliantly, and it was done through Julianne Lembro, you know, they had Envision.
Yes, yes, yes.
They developed a virtual reality system where we're sitting down with traditional people, and they have a different wisdom to a lot of, you know, the more Western educated people. They look at things differently. They're very visual. Well, with a virtual reality, you can actually transpose a parcel of land where somebody's got a want to have an interest in it, and you can actually impose everything on that land to make it show what it's going to, how it's going to change, and what it's going to look like at the end of it. So they can actually see it.
Mm.
So rather than just talking about it and using
have the picture there. Picture says a thousand words.
That even I can't understand. You can get the traditional owners to sit down and have a look at this, and when they say, well, we're going to do this, or we're going to do that, we're going to build this, they can actually physically see it.
Yeah, visual.
And visual, and I think that that's something that may well help in the decision-making process.
Exactly.
Rather than having all these university qualified people telling and giving them a whole lot of words and assurances that they don't really understand. And but rather, because a lot of these people are very visual,
of course. Well, I'm one of those persons, you know. I need to look at things visual, then I understand it. The penny drops, so to speak.
So that's just something I have in the back of my mind to be, you know. I think that that's sort of the thing. If we're going to be talking to the TOs, we should be requiring virtual reality technology to be there so they can actually see what you're talking about.
Okay, so with Jungun Gorge and with the destruction of it, a horse has already bolted? Are we talking compensation as well?
It's been totally destroyed.
And were we talking compensation, or that conversation got to be at the table?
I don't know. I don't want to be talking compensation on this. I just don't want it to be destroyed. Now, I don't know what has been paid. Obviously, there may well have been money already paid. I don't know. I don't know who got it. That's why we're having an inquiry.
Okay.
But, we don't want to be talking about, okay, well, we knock something down and then, we'll give them a handful of blood.
But we also need something that's, through legislation, through the government, that protects all a sacred site across this country.
That's exactly what
one rule for all.
Yeah, the money never, ever replaces the cultural significant bit. You can't rebuild the Jungun case.
No, exactly. It's really disheartening. And I'm believing, I'm hearing that there's been other sites where mining companies have damaged as well. Is that the case?
Well, I've heard hearsay. And as I said, I've also heard there's another up to half a dozen sites that are threatened to be damaged, and that's why we need to move quickly.
Exactly.
We'll be asking to identify those sites, and we'll be working with them as well.
Well, the longer that the conversation doesn't be had, then other mining companies will go ahead and sort of make the so-called same mistake, yeah?
No. We want to make sure that doesn't happen. That's what we're trying to... It's much bigger than just the Jungun Cave.
Of course.
But the Jungun Cave is a good start for it.
Okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room in regard to here in Cairns on Sheridan Street, the big 32-foot statue of Captain Cook. And what's your thought in regarding statues around the country? And when you look at someone like Robert Towns and Townsville, who Townsville was named after, who was one of the biggest black-burdened men on planet Earth, what's your call about statues?
Well, my view... Let's leave them alone. They're part of history. They're part of teaching people about what happened and in a different time. Now, if we're going to start running around, and interestingly with Captain Cook, if you go up to Cooktown and you start talking to the local Bummer people up there, they have a very different perspective on Captain Cook.
They do the reenactment every year.
They do it every year. And they
except
do
for
it
2020.
They also acknowledge that Captain Cook, actually them, and a little old man whose name was never recorded in history, through his actions with presenting a broken spear, enacted the first act of reconciliation in Australia. And it's accurately recorded in Cook's journals. And it came about when Cook's crew, not understanding the culture, went out and collected some turtles to for protein. When the local bomber decided to say we want some of them as well, and they said no. My understanding is as they were leaving as retribution, they speared a pig. And so they all lined up with spears and muskets, and they were going to start slaughtering. And this little old man stepped forward and said, "Rightio, no, this is not a place where we kill. This is a place where we you know, of peace."
Mm.
And through that, they understood it. The action was understood, and that element of reconciliation. That is a very, very important lesson. I mean, also, the local community then took them for a walk on the other side, the north of the Endeavour River, about 38K, which we're doing a reconstruction of that now, an interpretive tale, where Banks collected a lot of botanicals, you know, plant specimens. In fact, the majority he collected along that way,
mm-hmm.
and that was done in support. So there was some really good stories. Now, there's always, in history, every single society, every single culture, every single race, do things in, if you go back far enough in history, where when you measure them up to society today, you would say, you know, it's not appropriate.
And but that's how it was done back and then regarding rules and society.
That includes our indigenous populations as well. You know, some of the things that happened in the Torres Strait Islands and, you know, up in some of the communities, and this is a long, long time ago, but we don't judge people on that. But what we do is we learn from it. Because if we're going to start saying, let's go and knock down these, it gives a point where we can look at these, we can understand what their history is, and it gives us an incentive not to recreate that.
Well, the talk with First Nation people, some of the mob I talk to, different opinions, what have you. Some are saying, well, that's Australia's history, good or bad, black or white, that's the history. But also, we have black history as well. So we're talking about probably black statues alongside or the stories for black people in this country. If you want to keep the statues there of Captain Cook and Burke and Wills and what have you, let's have black statues up there as well. Tell both sides.
You're singing from the same hymn book as me. In fact, I got the money recently. We're having it built as we speak. Is a little old man that's being built in bronze and that's going to be standing at the Reconciliation Rocks in Cooktown, so that it tells the story and it pays respect to that little old man for what he did all those years ago.
Mm.
So we are building those statues. And we should. They shouldn't be particular ones. See, the problem that I have, if you're looking at particular, you know, I mean, in inhumane treatments of one group of humans by another, I mean, does that mean we go down and go and destroy the pyramids and the Sphinx?
Mm.
Because guess who built them? Slaves.
Exactly.
A Machu Picchu in Cambodia, an ancient temple there, the Maya temples down in South America. Do we go and destroy them because they were built under different circumstances by slaves? What about the Colosseum in Rome?
Exactly.
Fed Christians to the lions.
Exactly.
Do we destroy that? Stonehenge. Yep. These are critical parts of our history. Now, history was not all, you know, bubbles and beads and happy times.
Sure.
There were some appalling, appalling things that were done. Go back to Attila the Hun. Go back to Ivan the Terrible.
Mm. Exactly.
What was his name? Ivan the Impaler. All of these people were horrible.
Yes.
But we need to know about them so that we know it was a whole different world that we're you know, when the Romans invaded the world, what they did to the Saxons in Britain.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. So some horrific things that went on, and First Nation people look at some of the people who are statued and looked up in honour. You know, some of them, well, as per the painting of red paint on the hands of Captain Cook, I mean, some have got blood on their hands, and it's black people have said, well, that's just like having a statue of a paedophile, you know what I mean? A rapist, a murderer. And let's talk about the Prime Minister saying that there was no slavery in this country. What's your call on that, Mr. Inch?
when you look at what happened in, it was a different, again, different way to what was done by going out in grabbing the grabbing Africans and dragging them in chains in boats and brought over to America and to the UK, other places where they did it. That's what most people see as slavery. What happened, of course, in Australia, you could argue that the convicts that were brought over in chains from the prison.
Australia was the first, the prison place for the convicts.
You could argue that, you know, they were slave labour too. You could, and I know that there's an argument about the Pacific Islanders that were brought here, but they weren't...
Kanakas.
The Kanakas. Now, when they were brought here, they were brought here with promises of small wages, and they were kept here, for some financial reward. They were brought over here, often deceived, kept for much longer than they had promised, and not in great conditions.
Mm.
But you know, it wasn't the same as what we've seen in the United States, where people were openly putting people up on the blocks and owning them as they would own an animal, and being able to auction them off or sell them off or execute them at will. That didn't, you know, that's not the way it happened. Was it the right thing to do? Well, in hindsight, of course it wasn't.
Mm.
And again, you can't change what history was. But on the same token, I think it's fair to say, if you go back
but you can bring the other half of the history forward too by having our black statues of Namanjira, of Cathy Freeman, of Mr. Bonner.
I think there are. I mean, the Parliament House, I know, has got statues of those and artworks by those. I'm not too sure whether... there's no reason. There's nothing stopping those sort of statues. As I said, I went and got the money to build a statue for the little old man up in Cooktown, and
yes,
that will be finished, I expect, sometime this year.
Beautiful. Yep, beautiful. I've got to run. Yeah. Warren, I thank you very much for your chat, but we'll keep in touch, my friend, and stay safe.
Thanks, Trev. All the best. And one day we're going to build a statue of you, mate.
You're a good man, brother. I don't want that. Bally fella. Bally fella. Thank you very much, Warren. All the best. That's Warren Inch there, Member of Parliament, the Member of Leichhardt. And we're talking about COVID-19. We're talking about the destruction of the Jungan Gorge, and also talking about the white elephant in the room regarding this statue. And Yarn Up Strong here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say. We've got Selwyn on the line. Selwyn, very good morning, my brother.
Yeah, brother, I'm really pissed off. I said a few F words and I'm missing to one.
Okay, sure. Yeah, tell us how you feel.
Yeah, it's first quote is the Minister of Promotion. I got really... Brother, you're fully closed, brother.
What's that, brother?
You're fully closed there.
I missed that.
You're fully closed there.
Yeah, no. What are you saying there?
That's my point, brother. Eddie tells me history.
Yep.
And they change history. We're not making any more, are we?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
It's only 250 years, brother.
Yep.
Captain Cook, only 250 years, the sacred site doesn't...
Yep, you know, exactly.
It's only yesterday.
Yep, exactly. 240 odd years, and we're talking 40,000 years, aren't we?
That's right, yeah, brother, or 80,000, whatever it is, brother. Stuff and cook down there, brother. Where was... Oh, I could have bloody... You know, they acknowledging that old man. Where was it? Bloody Kerry Norris, brother. Nobody was there. Where was it? Marble, everybody fighting for their land. Who was all that history? Where was it then? There were people here. They are in their jail. They said, no people here.
Exactly, brother. Yep, exactly.
I'm really pissed off.
You're containing yourself, controlling yourself. That's deadly, brother. But I feel your anger. And look, I'm in the same boat. And I picked up what Warren saying about slavery in this country wasn't brought over in boats and chains and what have you. But slavery is slavery, no matter how you look at it, what form, eh?
No, that's right.
Okay, my brother. Thanks for sharing, my brother. All the best. That's someone there having his say here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Add to the conversation, but you have to do that tomorrow because Murray's going to sign off here, back in the hot seat again tomorrow with that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. But you can add to the conversation, 045-714-0550 is the text line, or our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. To Deadly Mob, thanks for sharing. Thanks for your company. And back in the hot seat again tomorrow. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. More importantly, stay safe. We're still in COVID-19 and we need to do our bit, you mob.
My name's Raven and you're listening to Talk Black on BBM 98.7 FM.